There's been a lot of talk, both on this program and elsewhere, about the opioid epidemic the state and country are facing. But within that epidemic, new research shows patients suffering from mental illness are being prescribed a disproportionate share of these painkillers. Brian Seitz led that research. He's an anesthesiologist and professor at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in New Hampshire. And Brian, why do you think it is this population is getting such a disproportionate share of opioid prescriptions?
Well, the first thing I'd like to just make sure that your audience understands is that our research does not answer that question, and that's obviously the million-dollar question. It's the most provocative extension of the work. What we can say definitively from this paper is that using national data, we found that despite representing only 16% of the overall U.S. population, people who suffer from mental health disorders, namely depression, anxiety, or mood disorders, are being prescribed over 50% of the country's opioids.
Are there interactions between opioids and medications that folks might take for anxiety, for depression, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, all drugs have some sort of interaction, and some more so than others. But various medications that are used commonly for anxiety disorders can exacerbate some of the side effects of opioids. And so overdoses would be more likely in the setting of mixing those drugs.
Do you have a sense of what kinds of doctors are prescribing these opioids to patients with mental illness? Are these primary care physicians? Are they psychiatrists?
So the bulk of the prescribing in the country happens at the primary care level. So, and I would suggest that the family medicine docs are on the front lines of managing pain because they have the closest relationship with patients. And I also want to just stress that by no means does this data suggest that anybody's doing anything wrong. You know, these prescriptions could be completely appropriate for the patients and on an individual level. The concern is obviously on a national level. The magnitude of prescribing has led to all sorts of problems. So many people are getting opioids for so many conditions that we as a country are trying to pull back and say, hey, who really should be getting these drugs?
Well, so given the research that you've done and your work, and given the opioid epidemic that we are currently in the midst of, I'm curious where you think what you found here as far as prescription rates and overdose rates among patients with mental illness fall sort of in the larger scope of the overall crisis in which we find ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe that the prescription opioid patterns in the United States have contributed to the overall opioid epidemic. There's a very complex relationship between mental illness and pain because there's no biological measure for pain. So obviously, patients with behavioral disorders and mental illness are going to have perhaps a different reporting characteristic to their pain than someone who doesn't have those problems.
So does that mean, do you think, that the way out of this problem might be different for patients with mental illness than those without?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that if you effectively treat a lot of mental illness with therapy, both pharmacologic therapy and counseling, you could probably minimize the need for a lot of these opioid pain medicines. If we have infrastructure to really offer alternative therapies, see, I mean, you're sitting in a family medicine office and you come in with chronic back pain. I mean, just tactically, it's so easy to order a prescription. But if you were to get, you know, massage, physical therapy, yoga, cognitive behavioral therapy, that's going to take time and resources that don't currently exist to get that all set up. And that's what really has to get built.
But on that infrastructure front, I'm wondering, you know, you'd mentioned that family docs are often on the front lines of this. I'm wondering if there's sort of an infrastructure gap that family physicians maybe aren't the best equipped to be handling this, that maybe it is a more of a holistic approach, a psychiatrist or maybe even a team of doctors who need to get together to really figure out, okay, does this patient need pain meds? Do they need physical therapy? Do they need massage? Do they need yoga? What exactly
right.
do they need?
Right. And what are the expectations for the patient in terms of pain? So I think you're absolutely right. We have not figured out the perfect combination of resources in physicians to manage these complex issues, especially when you pepper in the mental health disorders, because then it becomes much, much more complicated.
Yeah, it just seems like, I mean, as a family doc, like, yes, they are equipped to look at the whole body, but especially when you get a mental illness in there, you have maybe addiction issues in there, it seems like it might just be overwhelming for one physician who's probably also seeing 40 other patients
you're
that same day
right.
to handle.
You're absolutely right. I mean, there is a crisis of the under treatment of mental illness in the United States, too, and there's a crisis of the lack of resources for good psychiatric help. It's just, and part of it is an issue of how we fund healthcare. You know, I love to be able to say, for sure, I know why this group is getting a disproportionate amount of prescribing. My best guess is that it's an overcompensation by the physician trying to help a patient who's probably expressing their pain condition in a way that may be different than someone who doesn't have those conditions, mental health conditions.
Brian Seitz is an anesthesiologist and professor at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in New Hampshire. He led the research team that found patients suffering from mental illness are being prescribed a disproportionate share of opioids. For another perspective, we turn now to Paul Gianfrido, president and CEO of Mental Health America. That's a Virginia-based nonprofit that works to address the needs of people with mental illness. And Paul, first off, what do you make of this research?
Well, I think that we have learned that the rates of opioid use and opioid addiction are a lot higher than a number of people, many of us, thought they would be. And I think that the research is beginning to bear this out, that we really need to take an integrated approach to dealing with all behavioral health problems, and we certainly need to do a better job in the primary care side of understanding what the relationship of some of the needs that people express in primary care offices are to the needs that they would express in specialty care structures or offices, particularly those relating to behavioral health.
Is that a matter of patients speaking to different kinds of doctors differently, or the way that doctors, maybe different doctors, understand what patients are saying?
I think that there's some communication issues on both sides. I think that patients are often afraid to talk about their drug abuse because of the fear that it's going to be illegal or found to be illegal in some way, and that they're going to get in trouble if they talk about it. And I think that doctors often don't have a complete picture about a patient, so that they really don't understand all of what a patient is going through. And so a doctor who prescribes a pain medication for a patient who's in excessive pain doesn't take the time to step back and say for a minute, but is that patient also experiencing other certain symptoms, like symptoms of mental illnesses, that may complicate what I need to do for that patient? We don't give doctors a lot of time with patients, and as a result, they don't often get to know the whole patient.
Do you get the sense that when patients who are suffering from mental illnesses go and talk about the pain that they are suffering with doctors, in the sense that they might need some kind of prescription painkiller, is it generally a problem of physical pain, or is it something other than that?
The problem, I think, is that the doctors often think initially, well, you know, the pain is all in your head. And the patients sometimes think, well, the pain is all in my head. And I think that there's a mythology about this, that the symptoms aren't real. The symptoms are real in many instances. The physical problems really exist. These are conversations doctors and patients need to have together.
Is there an issue, do you think, maybe as part of that, of patients maybe not knowing which doctor they should be bringing which problem or which symptoms to?
It's really difficult for a patient to figure this out sometimes, because a lot of the symptoms of a physical illness are behavioral sometimes, and a lot of the symptoms of a mental illness are physical sometimes.
So in your discussion of what some of the issues are here, it seems like the biggie, sort of the broad category, seem to be communication and sort of the infrastructure of healthcare in terms of who is treating what and to whom patients report different symptoms. I'm wondering what we do about this. I mean, you think of communications issues as being somewhat easy to fix, but in many ways, they're not actually that easy to fix.
Yeah, they're really not easy to fix. If we understand that most of the prescribing of mental health medications is being done by primary care clinicians, not by mental health specialists, then we begin to understand that what we're dealing with is a primary care clinician who was asked to do an awful lot, and a primary care clinician who may have had little or no training in that particular area. So what we really need to do, I think, to improve communication is to bring more professionals into the picture. In the state of Arizona, for example, peers are being used, people with lived experience who can also work as bridges between clinicians and their patients. in addition to the specialists who can come in from the other side. We need to understand that we need to have a teaming approach, because if we have a teaming approach, it's easier to translate between patient and provider, because we bring in a whole set of people who've got different perspectives and can bring better information and more training and more learning and experiences to bear on a situation.
Paul Gianfrido is president and CEO of the group Mental Health America.